Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com and he'll take them at the end of the call. Today we have Chief Investment Officer John Portwood, and Investment Directors David Lundgren, Luther McDougall, and Jeffrey Tangus. And with that, I'll pass it to the moderator, David Lundgren.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. And John, as we normally do, we'll start with the economy, and let's start here in the U.S. It appears that possibly we've hit a bump in the road. Yesterday, the ISM Manufacturing Index recorded its weakest reading in 8 months. Some other economic indicators appear to be a little bit weaker. Is this a temporary thing, or do you think the economy here in the U.S. is truly slowing?
First, let's think about the leading indicators. The last reading we had on the leading indicators suggested that, you know, recession was not a near-term probability. So, you know, we'll kind of get that away, out of the way on the front end. There's nothing to indicate that at the present time that a recession is just around the corner. So we're probably good on that score for, you know, another, you know, number of months, I suppose. As far as the ISM is concerned, that is a very volatile index, as many of you probably know, and I think we may have commented on that in the past. 51.3% number, or rather 51.3 on that index, still indicates we have an expansion in progress. And, you know, the people that build that index suggest, you know, given its relatively brief history as an indicator, that its equivalent reading today is consistent with maybe a 2.5% growth economy or so. So, you know, by itself, it doesn't necessarily suggest that anything significant is happening, and, you know, there may be some weather-related factors, of course, you know, in that number as well. The problem, I guess, we have from an economic standpoint is that, you know, we're in something of a new normal environment, as we've talked about before. For example, since 2009, cyclical spending, and that's, you know, capital expenditures by corporations, private real estate, you know, new private real estate construction, commercial real estate, and so forth, is still depressed compared to history. In fact, you could make the case that, you know, that kind of spending today is probably still at some levels that were associated with, say, early recession periods in the past. So, you know, it's been a relatively, you know, tepid recovery. If you go back to 2009 and come through the end of this year, based on the, you know, the latest estimate we've had for fourth quarter GDP, you see the GDP, real GDP, on average has grown about 2.2% annualized, which, you know, something we've talked about before, that it appears we're in sort of a 2%, you know, plus or minus economy rather than, let's say, going back to something that the economists like to talk of as escape velocity, where you get over 3% and maybe even over 4%, and you stay there consistently for a period of time. It doesn't look like we are yet in a position to experience that sort of thing. If you look at the way the real GDP has progressed since the recession, the numbers look kind of like a sine wave, and that's like an S-I-N-E wave. You've had cycles from 1.5 GDP to 3, back to 1.5, back to 3, roughly, and on a year-over-year basis I'm talking here, not individual quarters. And now here we are back on another upswing, and we're at 2.744% for the last 12 months. And this year we've seen a better progression from quarter to quarter, which I think has probably been encouraging to a degree. And it suggests that, you know, the economy probably has enough staying power to survive, you know, without a lot of QE, which is, and as we know, the Federal Reserve is beginning to cut back on their stimulus. But in any case, you know, does it have enough oomph and enough fuel, so to speak, to, you know, generate escape velocity in a couple of years of really very, very strong GDP growth. And that doesn't appear to be the case currently. Again, I mentioned that cyclical spending was still depressed. If you look at the velocity of money and the money multiplier, those numbers that have some, you know, bearing on what the dynamism of the economy is like are still soft and still heading south, so that doesn't look particularly attractive. Three-quarters of the jobs that were created over the last 12 months, according to the data I see, suggest that they were all low-wage jobs or part-time jobs, which is not too attractive. If you consider that 35 hours per week now is probably considered full employment, and you look at the 35 hours or better compared to, you know, hours below that, you still see a pattern of lower hours worked, I suppose, you know, again, suggesting that, you know, part-time jobs are, you know, increasing at a relatively, or have increased at a relatively faster rate. You still haven't reached a point where the full-time jobs have crossed over, you know, into an uptrend. And I saw some numbers the other day on hours worked, average hours, not average hours worked, but wage increases, you know, for hourly wages are running about 1.5% annualized today compared to about 3% prior to 2007-2008. So, you know, it looks like we're still, you know, in a positive economic trend. It's just that the trend is not particularly exciting. And, you know, it's, you know, there's really no indicator out there now that you can point to that would suggest we're about to break out of that. So my guess is that we're still in that, you know, 2% plus or minus world. And, you know, fortunately, it looks like, you know, enough of the excesses were wrung out of the economy in the crash of 2007-2008 to put us in a position where if we do have a slowdown, let's say, you know, and it's highly, you know, it's certainly, I don't know how probable it is, but it's certainly possible that we could, you know, slip from a 2.74% annual rate to something below that, I guess, as we go forward. But, you know, the probability of having a severe recession at this point, given that we never really got off the runway, so to speak, you know, after the last recession, is probably a reasonable expectation, which is helpful, I guess, as far as the downside is concerned. But there's nothing out there that really suggests that, you know, we're about to have a breakout anytime soon.
In January, there were a lot of headlines and discussion in regards to the global economy and a global slowdown, particularly in the emerging markets. Talk a little bit about what's going on in other countries of the world. And I guess the concern would be, if you see a recession in a lot of these emerging market economies, can it in turn pull the U.S. economy down as well?
I guess it's possible. China has been slowing for a long time, and I know it's even made the mainstream media from time to time. But you know, we've been following that for quite some time, and you know, China has a real estate problem in that. A lot of their money has gone into real estate. The debts are high. Their shadow banking system, you know, outside of the major banks, has created an enormous amount of debt, and that's worrying. And the Chinese are trying to bring all of that under control. Consequently, Chinese growth has slowed down considerably, and obviously their exports to the West have slowed as our economy has you know, not really rebounded, or the developed world hasn't rebounded all that fast. So that's kind of an issue. The other emerging economies are in different growth stages. Some are worse than others. Brazil is in recession. You know, some of the emerging European economies are not having a good time of it. The main problems now appear to be in Thailand, Turkey, the Ukraine, you know, in Eastern Europe, and some others that slip my mind at the moment. So it's kind of a mixed picture in the emerging area. But what's happened in the emerging world, as the developed world has slowed, most of their business and most of their growth has come from exporting things to the developed world. And, of course, they're not doing that to the extent they did in the past. Some have also been highly dependent on commodities. Commodity prices peaked in 2011 and are still, you know, gradually declining. So that has, you know, slowed their growth. Now, in the midst of all this, the Federal Reserve, of course, has initiated, you know, quantitative easing, and to some extent, you know, something similar has happened in Europe. And a lot of that money that they have created has been, you know, basically hot money that has gone into some of the emerging economies looking for higher yields and better returns than they can get in the developed world. And when the Fed started to taper, then that was sort of a signal that, you know, things are tightening. You know, perhaps, you know, that money will no longer be available, you know, in the emerging markets. And it may be time to bring that money home. And so a lot of that money, a lot of the problems in the emerging markets recently, you know, from an exchange rate situation, have been the result of all that hot money flowing out of the emerging markets. And so, you know, to some degree, that's kind of like what happened back in the late 1970s when we had what was called the Asian crisis. It doesn't appear to be that serious at this time, but you know, growth generally is slowing everywhere, I suppose. I don't think we ever expected anything significant to happen from a worldwide standpoint because of what was happening in the emerging markets since their growth was slowing. But, you know, apparently there has been some disappointment, I guess, that the situation has developed the way it has. But really, none of this is really new. I mean, we've known for quite some time, again, that the emerging markets were subject to hot money flows. We've known that their economies were slowing over the last few years, and we've known, for example, that the situation in Europe hasn't changed. You know, Greece still needs to be bailed out periodically. It's basically, you know, a welfare state, Southern Europe now. And the last data we got on Greece indicated that over the last several years, median incomes have declined 40%. So you can imagine how devastating that is in Greece, and you can imagine what that would be like if we saw that kind of situation happening here. So, you know, again, there are some problems out there, and they're weighing on growth at the moment. And you know, while growth will probably remain positive, it's probably going to be somewhat spotty.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Luther.
Good morning.
Well, you get the fun job of talking about stocks today, and I'm sure most listeners are aware, we had a pretty rough January. The S&P 500 was down 3.5%. And then if you factor in yesterday, stocks are down almost 6% year-to-date. So pretty rough start coming off of an incredible 2013. And I guess, you know, some of the concern is, as it always happens, when you have a strong bull market, a lot of investors become complacent. And you get this mindset of stocks only go up, and I think it was a real wake-up call for a lot of people this month and into February. So if you could maybe highlight the month and give us your thoughts on the market going forward.
Okay, let's start with just a thought that 6 weeks ago, or even 3 weeks ago, not 3 weeks, so let's say 4 weeks ago. Everybody's outlook on the market really hasn't changed from then to, let's say, back in December. However, what we've seen in January is the market really sell off without a change in the underlying, you know, fundamentals or economics. And I think that is part of that is that mentality that you mentioned, that we had a great year last year. And now we're in a new year, and for some reason everybody thinks we have to all of a sudden readdress and what's going to happen and where we are, even though, like I said, the underlying fundamentals haven't changed. But because of that, January was a tough month. The average daily stock swing last month of 0.6%, which is huge, was about 11% above that of 2013. So there's obviously some concerns or a lot of confusion is not the right word, but we're readdressing. Everybody's looking at the market, trying to decide, is it going to be another good year? Is it going to be a bad year? Is it going to be a moderate year? And apparently right now, nobody really knows. But last month, if you look at how the various sectors performed, it kind of looks like what you would expect in a down month. Those sectors that had high dividend yield or were more growth-oriented, such as utilities and telecommunication services, and then information technology and healthcare on the growth side, did the best. Now, some of those were still negative, but they weren't as negative as the S&P, which was down, as you mentioned, 3.45%. And the weakest areas were those that, as John was talking about, with the economy maybe a little bit weaker or at least perceived to be weaker at this point in time, were those that were much more exposed to the economic cycles, such as energy, consumer discretionary, materials, and industrials. So the market behaved as pretty much as one would expect, given the news that was out, whether it was long-term indicators or short-term fluctuations, we won't know for a while. But the market's taking it as at its word that we're going to have a slower economy, and we'll see about that. It was also a tough month around the world, as if you look at the total stock market, that's the U.S., or all of the global stock markets, ex the U.S., was down 4.5%. The Europe, Australia, and the Far East was down 5%. And as John was mentioning, the biggest hit was in the emerging markets, which were down 8.4%. So it was a tough month all the way across the board. As far as what our thoughts are going forward, if those of you who are regular participants or listeners in on the call, we've been saying for some time that we thought the market was a little bit on the expensive side and that there was the potential for a pullback. Not so much expecting a bear market, but definitely the correction was a possibility. Now, we're halfway to a correction, and whether we continue there or not is still to be seen. But we have been trying to warn everybody that the market was a little bit heavy on the valuation side. And going forward, though, we would still expect to see the market rebound by year-end, unless we do get that big decline in the economy, which, as John said, we don't really expect. We would still expect to see a slightly positive calendar year return for the S&P 500, something, I hate to say it, normal in the, you know, say, 6 to 10% range.
John, anything you'd like to add to those thoughts or comments in regards to the market?
I guess only this, that, you know, we're in a different, you know, economic and financial environment than we were some years ago, and it's probably a much more volatile environment, not only, you know, from a financial standpoint, but also from an economic standpoint. And of course, a lot of that has been this uncertainty and artificiality, I suppose, has been generated by what the Fed has done with QE. You know, we've never had anything like that before. Its effect on asset prices has been notable, obviously. We've talked about that. Its effect on the broad economy has been less so, and that's been sort of the experience in Europe. You know, of course, the European Central Bank doesn't operate exactly like ours, so they can't really have, you know, the near-term impact, I suppose, that our central bank can. But, you know, there's, you know, what they have done, you know, is inject a certain amount of uncertainty and volatility into the markets that, you know, we're not used to, but that we probably are going to have to get used to as time moves on. So it's just something we'll have to learn to live with. Something else I thought I'd mention, too, when we're thinking about the economy and the markets, you know, sometimes the market and the economy seem to be correlated in the short run, and other times they're not at all, and the market will sort of move to its own drummer and do, you know, strange things compared to what the economy is doing. For example, there have been two severe sell-offs in the market in the past, and, you know, I was in the market to a degree for both of those. One was in 1962, and the other one was in 1987. They were not associated with any kind of economic dislocations or economic problems at all. So, you know, all sorts of strange things can happen in the market, and it's just something that we need to, that all investors need to keep in the back of their minds as they, you know, try to figure out what their asset allocation should be and how much risk, you know, they're willing to take. So, you know, unfortunately, there's nothing in the current environment and nothing in, as far as we can see, in the immediate future that would suggest that anyone can abandon caution yet. So just keep that in mind when you're thinking about asset allocation and thinking about maybe advising other people on, you know, what they should do with their money.
Great. Thanks, guys. Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I guess interesting time for bonds as well. When we entered 2014 or at the end of 2013, a lot of strategists thought that as the Fed pulled out or tapered over the course of the year, there'd be a natural rise in rates. You know, as the biggest buyer of bonds pulls out, something needs to fill that void, and you just have this natural increase in rates. And in January, quite the opposite happened. We started the year with the 10-year Treasury right around 3%, and as of this morning, we're near 2.6%. And that's a pretty dramatic move for a one-month period. What happened in January, and what's your outlook?
Well, January, let me say, for those who watched the Super Bowl and Richard Sherman, I would say that basically the bond market pulled a Richard Sherman tirade in the month of January. It just jumped up and surprised everybody and scared a lot of folks. And so it was essentially a case where, I mean, all the bad news that could have been out was out, and that there really were no more sellers. Everybody has, at this point, accepted the fact that the Fed is tapering, accepted the fact that the economy is getting better. So all of that was really factored in. It was the market was really ready for a big surprise. And as we always talk about, the market, both the stock and the bond markets, always seem to do whatever they have to do to surprise most of the people most of the time, and this was a classic example of that. You know, it was a case where the 10-year Treasury was up 4% in the month of January. John Portwood made a good comment recently where he said, you know, all the people who thought bonds were for sissies and losers and sold bonds late last year and bought stocks now, they've been whipsawed. So I think this is a classic example of why we always preach the benefits of a balanced and diversified portfolio. But essentially what happened is January turned into a risk-off month, and so because of the emerging markets, because of the pricing in the stock market and a lot of factors, people decided that they wanted safety. And when it comes to safety, there's still nothing like good old-fashioned Uncle Sam bonds, and so people stampeded into government treasuries. Treasuries were the top performing asset on a similar maturity or similar duration basis. They outperformed corporate bonds, which were sort of a darling last year. They outperformed virtually everything. So it was a classic example of a reversion back to a mean. I don't think it's John and Luther said, I don't think it portends anything particularly telling for the rest of the year. I think what it does tell you, though, is what history teaches us, that the bond market, I think it was the last time the bond market was down 2 years in a row, which it was down roughly, the intermediate bonds indices were down about 1% last year. It was the 1960s was the last time we had two negative years in the bond market. So for whatever reason, it looks like the bond market is trying to put together a positive year, much to the surprise of many, many people. I think as far as what the future holds, I still think that when some of this fear subsides, that bond yields will raise. Where we are right now at 260, 270 is probably unsustainable. I would still say that we drift higher north of 3% by the end of this year, unless we really get into some tough economic times, which I don't think anybody's calling for at this point. So this is a little bit of a reversion to the mean. little bit of a just a correction from an overselling situation at the latter part of last year. But I think what it does show is that bonds are not dead, that there is still a good compelling reason to own bonds in a portfolio, even though that the in general probably the stocks are a better place to be, generally speaking, than bonds are for the next couple of years.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. It doesn't appear that we have any questions. So thank you, everyone, for joining, and we look forward to talking with you next month.